Hey, this is John Lee Dumas from EO Fire, and you're listening to Elective Rotation with Pharmacy Joe. You must be prepared to ignite.
What's up, Pharmacy Nation? I'm Pharmacy Joe. Thank you for listening to the Elective Rotation, a critical care pharmacy podcast. This is episode 41. In this episode, I'll review an article on monitoring enoxaparin with anti-factor 10A levels in morbidly obese patients, answer a drug information question about using morphine in a patient on dialysis, and share a great resource I use for researching which medications exacerbate porphyria. I have all the evidence supporting today's show linked up in the show notes at pharmacyjoe.com/episode41. If you know someone who would find this podcast helpful, please share it with them. The article I'm discussing today is titled Monitoring Enoxaparin with Anti-Factor 10A Levels in Obese Patients. The lead author is Young R. Lee, and it was published in Pharmacotherapy, November 2015. The bleeding risk potential and best dosing strategy for enoxaparin in morbidly obese patients is unknown. This study was a retrospective cohort of 99 morbidly obese patients in a community hospital. All patients either weighed more than 150 kilos or had a BMI greater than 40, and had steady state anti-factor 10A peak levels drawn between April 2009 and January 2014. The purpose of the study was to characterize anti-factor 10A peak levels as either therapeutic, subtherapeutic, or supratherapeutic in morbidly obese patients receiving full treatment doses of enoxaparin using a therapeutic range of 0.5 to 1.1 units per ml of anti-10A activity, and to assess the occurrence of bleeding complications in these patients. So the results were, enoxaparin therapy was monitored by using anti-factor 10A levels. Steady-state enoxaparin anti-factor 10A levels were measured 4 hours after administration of the third dose for peak level monitoring. The primary outcome was the proportion of patients whose steady-state anti-factor 10A peak values were in the therapeutic, subtherapeutic, and supertherapeutic ranges. The secondary outcome was occurrence of major bleeding. Univariate regression analysis was performed to identify the correlation between baseline patient characteristics and anti-factor 10A levels. Most of the patients, 50.5%, had supratherapeutic levels. 35.4% had levels within the therapeutic peak range of 0.5 to 1.1, and 14% had subtherapeutic levels. No bleeding was observed in any of the patients. Univariate analysis revealed a negative association between anti-factor 10A levels and serum creatinine concentration. The authors concluded that monitoring anti-factor 10A levels is warranted to ensure the safety and efficacy of enoxaparin in the obese patient population. Enoxaparin dose individualization and anti-factor 10A level monitoring need further validation with clinical outcomes. I really appreciate this article being published, as there's a dearth of evidence with how to treat morbidly obese patients with enoxaparin. Most often, when I have a morbidly obese patient who needs full-dose parenteral anticoagulation, I favor the use of a heparin infusion since it can be monitored quantitatively. The drug information question I'd like to go over today was, my patient has new-onset end-stage renal disease requiring dialysis. Do I need to stop their extended-release morphine? My answer was yes. I do not use morphine for patients with chronic kidney disease. In normal renal function, it is the drug of choice for acute pain, but in chronic kidney disease, the active metabolites accumulate. toxicity can be expected with chronic use of morphine in CKD. One of the metabolites that accumulates, morphine-6-glucuronidine, may result in neurotoxicity. Even though other opioids will accumulate in CKD, I choose one that does not have active metabolites such as oxycodone, hydromorphone, or fentanyl. The resource I'd like to share today is the Porphyria Foundation's drug database. Porphyria is a rare disorder of heme synthesis. The Porphyria Foundation's database contains expert assessments of the potential of drugs to provoke attacks of acute porphyria. The database provides guidance based on a very careful evaluation of international clinical experience, published case reports, previously published drug lists, and theoretical considerations. Whenever I take care of a patient with porphyria, I always evaluate their current medication regimen by checking it against the Porphyria Foundation's drug database. Have you thought about starting a podcast? If you can Skype with your mom and upload a photo to Facebook, you have all of the skills necessary to start a podcast. I've created a step-by-step course that will take you from beginning to publishing your medical podcast, and I'll be there to support you along the way. For a free PDF download of all the resources I use to make this podcast, go to howtostartamedicalpodcast.com. Thank you so much for listening. I'll see you in the next episode of the Elective Rotation.